You could reach into your pocket, pull out a nickel, and find him gazing into the middle distance. As my liberal friends noted, always looking left. You could go to Charlottesville, Virginia, and see full-length statues of him on the campus he designed, then travel a few miles up his mountaintop and visit his spirit and mansion at Monticello. As of 1993, you could follow the James River down to Williamsburg, a route he took many times as a young man, and see another full-length statue of him on the campus of the College of William and Mary, a recent gift from the college he founded to the college from which he graduated, there looking off to the right, as my conservative friends noted, apparently studying the comings and goings at the adjacent women's dormitory. You could head north out of the Tidewater region, past Civil War battle sites, Cold Harbor, Chancellorsville, Fredericksburg, where both Union and Confederate soldiers believed they fought in behalf of his legacy. And you could cross over the Potomac from Virginia to the District of Columbia and find him in his own memorial on the Tidal Basin, looking straight ahead in this rendition, with plaques on the marble walls around him, reproducing several of his most inspirational declarations of personal freedom. Or, if you shared his romance with the American West, you could catch him in his most mammoth and naturalistic version on Mount Rushmore. But these were all mere replicas. In November 1993, a reincarnated Thomas Jefferson promised to make a public appearance in the unlikely location of a large brick church in Worcester, Massachusetts. On this raw New England evening, an impersonator named Clay Jenkinson had come to portray the flesh and blood Jefferson alive among us in the late 20th century. My own sense was that 40 or 50 hardy souls would brave the weather and show up. This, after all, was a semi-scholarly affair designed to recover Jefferson without much media hoopla or patriotic pageantry. As it turned out, however, about 400 enthusiastic New Englanders crowded into the church. Despite the long-standing regional suspicion of Southerners, especially Virginians, John Adams had said that in Virginia, all geese are swans. The appearance of Jefferson was obviously a major attraction. The American Antiquarian Society hosted a dinner before the event. All the community leaders, including the superintendent of schools, the heads of local insurance and computing companies, and a small delegation from the Massachusetts legislature, seemed to have turned out. What's more, representatives from the Library of Congress and the National Endowment for the Humanities had flown in from Washington. Also present were two filmmaking groups. From Florentine Films came Camilla Rockwell, who told me that Ken Burns of Civil War fame was planning a major documentary on Jefferson for public television. And from the Jefferson Legacy Foundation came Bud Leeds and Chip Stokes, who had just announced a campaign to raise funds for a big-budget commercial film on Jefferson. From Leeds and Stokes, I first learned that another major film on Jefferson in Paris was already planned, starring Nick Nolte in the title role. Their entourage included an Iranian millionaire who said that he had fallen in love with Jefferson soon after escaping persecution by the Islamic fundamentalists in Iran. An experience that gave him unique access to Jefferson's genius in insisting upon the separation of church and state. It was during the dinner that the germ of the idea made its first appearance in my mind, initially in the form of a question. What was it about Jefferson? Granted, 1993 was the 250th anniversary of Jefferson's birth, so a momentary surge in his reputation was to be expected. But were there any other prominent figures from the American past who could generate this much contemporary interest? There were only two possible contenders, so it seemed to me, both of whom also occupied sacred space on the Mall in the nation's capital, the American version of Mount Olympus. There was George Washington, the father of our country, who had the largest monument to patriarchal achievement in the world, dwarfing the memorials to the other American icons. Then there was Abraham Lincoln, who had a bigger memorial on the Tidal Basin than Jefferson, and was usually the winner whenever pollsters tried to rate the greatest American presidents. But Washington usually lost out to Jefferson. He seemed too distant and silent. There were no words etched on the walls of the Washington Monument. He was the Delphic oracle who never spoke, more like an Old Testament Jehovah, who would never come down to earth as Jefferson was doing tonight. Lincoln was a more formidable contender. Like Jefferson, he was accessible and had also spoken magic words. Ordinary citizens tended to know about the Gettysburg Address nearly as much as the Declaration of Independence. But Lincoln's magic was more somber and burdened. He was a martyr, and his magic had a tragic dimension. Jefferson was light, inspiring, optimistic. Although Lincoln was more respected, Jefferson was more loved.